Thank you for joining us for another episode of Digitally Diverse, a podcast where we do a deep dive into the influential and incredibly intelligent people in our product and design industry. So today we are joined with Ben Tattersfield. He is a product owner and analyst, business analyst at Codification. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So no, thank you for coming on. So for some of our listeners, can you give us like a brief overview of who you are, where you've come from, and yeah, an overview of your career to date?
Yeah, cool. Obviously, Ben Tattersfield, as you mentioned. Like my background's probably been quite different to your normal way of getting into the product route. I guess I really started just doing my own thing, particularly starting in the marketing space. So I actually worked at a bike shop, like, you know, your traditional push bike shop, early days of Facebook, where you got 100% organic growth, and just started putting some posts up on that, getting some customers in through the bike shop. I just built us a website on WordPress. I just really enjoyed that. So kind of just grew on that, started just doing some little freelancy WordPress websites things. Your traditional learn from YouTube / doing kind of approach. And then, yeah, moved into a marketing role in the travel industry, again, in the social media digital space, still in pure organic growth through Facebook in those early days, and the really good, successful Facebook ads where they went out everywhere and they didn't have all the fancy algorithmic stuff happening. And did really well out of that. And that really exposed me to the, I guess, the customer facing side in marketing, and particularly in managing the communities in that. And it was quite an interesting one because I was working with schoolies and a brand called Discover Queensland. So two very different audiences, right? It's sort of early to middle-aged females for Discover Queensland, and then 16 to 18-year-old teenagers. So having to sort of swap hats on that side and deal with the community management and the content marketing and everything of that was really good, of getting that experience of dealing with customers again. And then I was actually stuck in the, because we didn't really have like a marketing department. It was still quite small. So I was stuck in the IT room with the dev guys, like the engineers. And that sort of just exposed me to the work that they're doing on the website, which I really got into, and then was giving them feedback on sort of the UI and the UX design. Obviously in that marketing space of the split testing, A/B testing, and starting to introduce doing that onto the website with the engineers and things. So yeah, it was kind of a bit of a crash course into product without realizing that was the direction I was heading. Mm-hmm. Quite interesting. From that role, I actually moved into a UX UI analyst role in a startup in the travel industry, which was where I first got exposed to, call it the lean methodology, you know, going into agile, running in scrums, that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed it. And because we're in such a small team, I kind of ended up taking in, I don't even know what you call it, kind of like scrum master, product manager, doing the UI UX work, quite a bit of testing actually as well. Yeah, it was such a small team. There's only like four or five of us that I kind of became that just all-in-one product person. Again, without realizing that's really what it was. It was just like I enjoyed that, so I just naturally put my hand up when something had to be done. I've done a lot of self-learning. You know, if there was something that I didn't know, I'd just go and Google it, basically. End up down that rabbit hole of Google, and a lot of reading too, audiobooks in particular, which are really good around, you know, the lean startups and, you know, product stuff in general, once I worked out that product road was actually what I was interested in. So that was kind of my very messy background of slowly growing into it without actually realizing that was the direction I was heading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a story that I hear quite a lot. I was doing UX before I realized it had a name, and people just like tended to fall into it just like coming off the bat of being a self-taught now designer and business analyst. How did you land the role with Codification?
So I had my own startup previously. Actually, I worked on that for 5 years and was honestly pretty burnt out because I love the product and being hands-on with the product. And being a founder of a startup, and particularly as it's scaling, you basically, all your time is spent in people management and capital raising. Mm-hmm. That's really where it is. So yeah, I was fairly exhausted after we did a massive launch of our product. So this is a company called Sportcore. We put electronics inside a cricket ball. So I went over to the Caribbean during COVID, and we had a massive launch of the cricket ball over there. It was an eight-week trip, which sounds really cool, like 8 weeks in the Caribbean, oh, amazing. But it was during COVID, and we're in a bubble. So it's literally like you're in the hotel, you get on a bus, you go to the cricket ground, you work basically while you're there. For us, it was collecting the data off the ball, handing it over to, like, getting it through the broadcast. Then you're back on the bus, you're back to the hotel, you sleep, you wake up, and you do that basically every day for 8 weeks. And I was doing that on top of trying to close out a capital raise and look after the team back in Australia on that completely different time zone. Mm-hmm. So yeah, really stepped out of that. After that launch, I kind of had that goal of closing out the capital raise, launching the product, and then having some time off. So put a new CEO in there, took the time off to go back and earn some brownie points with the wife because she had to look after the kids while I was overseas. Yeah, kind of did a bit of sort of call it deep thinking about what I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And it was getting back into that product space. So I ended up taking up a role at EB Games, actually, in their head office. Awesome team in there, like great culturally as well. Like anyone that knows EB Games, you know, gaming and you know, all the swag and basically all the cool stuff that they have. So the internal culture in there is very, like, it's one of the best places I've worked at culturally. Mm-hmm. But then the opportunity with Coda popped up that was really good. And it sounds kind of a bit selfish, but basically, you know, EB Games was in Brisbane. I was on the Gold Coast. That drive backwards and forwards is a nightmare for anyone that knows the M1 doing that. And Coda had a really good work from home policy. And like I really like challenges. They've got some pretty good ones in terms mm-hmm. of like the challenges their customers are facing. So yeah, that was really it. It was like that combination of, yay, I don't need to sit in the car for 3 hours a day. And, you know, work in a more tech product focused platform. Mm-hmm. You know, EB Games was awesome. A lot of the stuff that basically everything they're working on is internal product, where this was like a larger scale external product, you know, that does have an eventual road to becoming a global product, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, no, that would be something really juicy to sink your teeth into. So, Ben, tell us a little bit more about, like, what codification does. Like, what kind of problems are you facing?
I guess Coda, in a nutshell, is a project management system for the insurance building industry. Mm-hmm. So we communicate with the insurance systems, collect, say you put a claim in for your house if you've had some flooding, as a lot of people around Queensland and New South Wales have. You put your insurance claim in, the insurers collect the information, pass it on to the insurance builders who basically look after your claim. So we build a software product for those insurance builders to basically onboard that claim information and try and automate as much as possible from the project management side so that things don't get lost and you're minimizing all those delays for the end customer. Mm-hmm. And that was part of what I actually quite liked about the problems that Coda is tackling, is that the definition of customer is quite segmented. You've got the customer of the insurance builder, the customer of the insurer, and then the customer that is the person who's actually made the insurance claim. And they've all got quite unique wants and needs about their experience. So, you know, when we're looking at the what value can we bring as a project management product, you know, particularly for anyone that has had that experience of having to do an insurance claim, delays the biggest pain in the ass out there. You know, when you just want to get back into your house, you just want to get something fixed or replaced or whatever it is, then yeah, delays for human error or just old-fashioned slow systems, you know, that's a frustration across all of those customers. So that is really a core focus of what Coda do, is trying to simplify the workload to reduce those delays.
Yeah, and yeah, so it's so true that like a lot of the customers, they're sometimes making claims in what could be like a really traumatic experience, really scary. So they it's really great that there's going to be like an option for them to be like, okay, no, I'm really going to be being taken care of, and the agents are feeling empowered to help them as best as they can too. So yeah, no, it sounds like you guys are really working on some pretty impactful stuff. That's great. What's it like working at Coda? Like, what's the culture like? What's the team like?
It's been a pretty interesting journey for me culturally. Like, coming from my own company, where as a startup, you want to get the culture right because that obviously helps attract the staff. But also as the founder, you're just so busy doing everything else that you don't really get the time to put the effort in to do it, especially in those early days. And like I said, when I left that and moved to EB Games, I was just, my mind was blown by the culture that they'd built. You know, I was there when we celebrated 20 years of EB Games, actually, which was pretty cool. But it was just amazing that, like, their staff retention rates are through the roof because it's just a really cool place to work. You know, everyone's got all their cool stuff on their desk. Like, you know, I've got my random Legos and lightsabers and stuff in the background. That was what everyone's desk is like in EB. If you walk in there, it's everywhere. And then that was actually a concern for me when I was looking at the Coda role when it popped up. I was like, I really don't want to leave EB. I really like this. So that was actually the one thing that I was really looking at when I went in for the interview with Coda, was what was it like? And it was quite funny, actually, because walking in there, the meeting room is called Alderaan. Now, for anyone that's a bit of a Star Wars nerd, that's a Star Wars reference. And all the internal, we call them pods, squads, whatever you call them. Each pod is named after a Star Wars.
I don't know
what you call it. Like a not a character, but like a class within Star Wars or whatever. And that was basically it for me. I was like, all right, this is cool. Like, there's a bit of a nerd culture going on here as well. It turned out that the former CTO at Coda was actually an ex-EB Games guy as well, which is where a lot of that came from, which is pretty cool. Actually getting to meet the team, I think, you know, those fears weren't really actually an issue. Like, culturally, everyone is really, I guess, understanding of what the goal is from sort of the vision of the company. You know, working, there's a large contingent working remote. Like, we only had to do 8 days a month, so basically 2 days a week in the office. But the way that they've managed to make that work and still retain that culture and things has been really good. And then obviously as a product owner, you've got to have a really good relationship with your, like, the pods, the engineers, and even the stakeholders that you're working with. And meeting the CEO and the COO and everyone, they're just super grounded and, like, kind of understand what the product team and the engineering team are facing and stuff. So, yeah, when there's problems and things, that's, like, there's never an issue, basically. And, you know, like, worrying about having to take some sort of blocker to management, it's just like, sweet, I'll just ping them a message on Teams, like, hey, bad news. You know, it's not going to be some, like, world-ending blow-up or anything like that. Like, they understand the product and the process and the customers and everything that we're dealing with really well. It's been really refreshing as well. And I think that change of going from your own product, where also your own company, your own startup, and then getting back into a company that has, you know, from my point, EB Games are really, like, concrete, fixed culture that's really good. And then into, you know, codification, which is in that scale up phase where they're kind of on the way to that, but, you know, the staff and everyone that's coming in is also kind of shaping the direction that that's heading. So yeah, it's been really good. Really good.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to, especially one after the other as well, go from pretty much like the stark opposites, like owning your own business and then going to a big global enterprise group at EB Games and then going into a scale up. Like, you would have seen anything and everything in that time. So it's great that you've found somewhere as well that seems like it's a bit of a mishmash of the two. Like, leadership is still really present, but you also do have that really great nerdy culture that you're after. So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's not obviously a must have, but, you know, when it's one of those things that you're uncertain of, and especially because like, I've really enjoyed being at EB Games and having that culture and the people there. It was like, you know, the work that Coda's on is awesome, but, you know, you don't want to leave that culture. That's like, I enjoyed, even though it was a 3-hour drive, I enjoyed working there. So like the 3-hour drive was part of that. So yeah, that kind of like mindset of like, you know, I don't really want to leave. And you kind of, especially when you're looking at it, you're kind of looking at it critically, like, you know, if I find something that I don't like, that's probably going to become my excuse for not taking the role.
Mm-hmm.
Just those little things where you're just like, cool, okay, like,
yeah,
these people will get me. Like, we're going to have that common element, and it's definitely there. Like the, yeah, we're creating something with the HR team at the moment that we're calling the Antisocial Social Club, mainly because obviously there's a big contingent working remotely that the concept of the social club doesn't always work. Like, not everyone's in the office at the same time, so we're just going to create some like social club style events that we can do remotely, just to sort of build on that, which is weirdly actually something that I did during, so when I came back from quarantine, or I had to come and do quarantine coming back into Australia from that Caribbean trip, and it was actually something that they'd organized while you're locked in your little shoebox hotel room. They organized these remote social events each day, and it was actually a lot of fun, like considering you can't really socialize or anything, to have, you know, remote wine tasting or remote comedy night or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, we just, I just floated the idea, like, hey, you know, would anyone like a company-wide gaming night? You know, we all jump on and have a bit of a competition on this game. I was like, yes. And I was like, all right, well, what about a remote wine tasting? Like, you know, we'll send you the wine and we'll get whoever it is to come and talk about it. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
So, yeah, that's like, I guess that's the kind of culture where you're not, And part of what I enjoy is you're not knocked back for having these suggestions or concepts and things as well. You know, those bigger companies that are really well established, they've got their kind of structure that those ideas have to go through. Whereas Coda, it's just, you know, at the weekly stand up with management or whatever, you can just be like, hey, I've got this idea. Let's all jump on Zoom and drink together. <It's>,
I'll go down a treat.
It's good.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I would love to hear a little bit more about like how you got into tech, like education wise, what career path did you take and would you choose that again?
Like I was saying earlier, I really started just self-taught kind of in the marketing space initially. So just literally like even more content, like just taking photos, putting them up, you know, using call to actions to try and drive customers. So it was nearly like a sales, like it was a sales goal initially. And even in the travel industry, it was around that. Yeah, I started doing those WordPress websites just on my own. And that was just through like, yeah, YouTube videos, online tutorials, a lot of trial and error. But that's kind of like my learning style is more of that learn by doing space. So that was really good. And then, yeah, getting into the startup scene, there are those boot camps and bits and pieces. So, you know, I went along like, yeah, startups, there's a lot of networking involved, but you can actually learn a lot from that. Mentors as well was a huge piece for me. So having mentors that are, you know, specialists in a particular area, you know, working in the bike shop, I used to go out riding with all these really successful businessmen. And yeah, sounds bad, but they're literally stuck next to you for the next 2 hours. So, you know, you have those conversations. Yeah, so like, you know, you have those conversations, and I know there's these mentor walks and things now that are kind of the same, less forced to talk to you in that regard. Yeah, the mentorships that I had was definitely like that was kind of the things that unlocked those big leaps in learning, is learning, you know, having those people pass on their lessons can save you, especially for someone like me that works on that trial and error concept. It can save you a lot of the errors and kind of have those big leaps in your learning and understanding of stuff. Then I've done a couple of really good accelerator programs. So Hype Sports Accelerator was one based out of UQ, actually here in Brisbane. So it was a university-based accelerator, but with a huge amount of input from the Hype program, which is an Israeli-based accelerator. So it's like a, yeah, kind of like the, this is how tech growth happens in Israel, which is super interesting. And here's how we do it, but from Australia, which is quite handy. And I also did another one that was a US-based one. And I think I'm probably the only person that's actually done both these programs, which is super interesting because you get that US insight into product versus the European insight of product. And I never thought of it being different. Like, you always just think of like how you build a company and scale its product and all of those sorts of things. You always think of them as the same, but you don't realize that there's also like a geographical influence into it as well. And then living in Australia, both those systems were like, yeah, you know, both of them were like, man, you guys are on like island time compared to like how fast we move. Like, that was probably my big takeaway from both programs, was just how slow we tend to move in Australia. And put it down to like our casual nature and things, like, you know, I made some really good connections and friends from those programs. And yeah, that was like their big thing. They're like, man, you guys are just so cruisy. Like, where's the pace? I'm like, dude, I'm like stressed out with how fast we're moving right now. He's like, you know, this is how you've got to go. And the US one was really good. Yeah, you know, that put me in front of the Silicon Valley product group, SCPG. Cool. And their, I think he's like the founder, Marty Kagan, and his books around, I think, like Empowered. What are they? Empowered, Inspired, and Loved, the three books. So it's basically about product management, sort of senior management around product, and then product marketing. So obviously for my background in marketing and that love of product, it was awesome. But just that insight, and I guess, again, that self-learning of like, do a program, you know, pick up the little bits out of that, and then find the pieces that are of interest and go and do those. Yeah, the other program I actually did was it was called CEO School. It was run by the accounting firm BDO, and it was for scale up. So basically, CEO founders that were, their businesses were scaling up really quick, and it got me into like, really forced you into the financial side of business, and I hate that. But yeah, coming from like that kind of creative problem solving mindset to be like, here are the numbers. They must be done this way. You can't find a better way to do it. You know, if it's a pain in the ass, that's just a pain in the ass because that's how it is. A
completely different way of thinking.
It was hard, but it also really helped me on the product side, because so often the finance part is a stakeholder in a project. So that understanding from their side has been really useful in, just understanding how tethered they are to the way things have to be. That it's even just the way you communicate stuff to them. Like, I change that. And the moment they understand that you understand a bit of their like pain points and the way they work, then that stakeholder relationship gets so much easier, rather than sort of typical thing I found of like, you know, we have to go and deal with finance, we have to go and deal with accounts. Like, they're always painful because they don't want to change stuff or anything like that. But doing those kind of, I guess, the informal courses, you know, going on Coursera and doing some of those basic finance ones, I found it really interesting to understand the tethers that these other elements of the business are held back by. So that when you're dealing with that particular area in a product, just acknowledging that with stakeholders can really go a long way towards that relationship and making the product development and that whole product management piece a lot smoother.
Yeah, and the more people that can be on the same page, the smoother it's going to be. And if you're not like having a tug of war of power with the people that all should be on the same team, then it's just going to be, that would be like a really good learning, I think, for most people in product ownership. So, and I guess obviously a lot of your education is a lot of like self-taught stuff and learning from others in the industry. Is that something that you would recommend to people wanting to get into tech, or would you recommend more of like a formalized education? How would you go about that?
Obviously, doing these programs, you know, the Hype program was based out of University of Queensland. That was actually my first experience of university. You know, I left high school early to go and work in a bike shop. You know, the New Zealand system is like a points-based high school system, and I gamed that by selecting specific courses through year 12 that would let me get enough points to finish high school. So I've sort of got enough points. I did some random programs like art history just because it was an external test that I got enough points to do. Like, never used that skill set at all ever again, at least actively. Maybe it did help on some design influencing stuff or
maybe subconsciously you draw upon that all the time.
But yeah, now that I think of it, maybe. But for me, I definitely prefer that and would suggest the self-learn route. Like university and those core structures, you know, there's sort of a controversial theme about, you know, people hire university grads because they've proven that they can turn up and do 3 years of work and do a reasonable enough job that you'll get an outcome out of them. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of the opinion that the universities are there to teach you how to learn. Yeah, you pick up, particularly in engineering and some of those skill sets, you need to learn some of that content. Everyone learns very differently. You know, 3 years of sitting in a classroom listening to someone sounds like hell to me. No matter how interesting that person might be, it's not a reflection of them or the course's content. It's just that concept of turn up, sit, listen to lectures, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm more of a watch a video and literally just do it as you're going, pause the video, go back and look at that thing again. Like, yeah, that side, speak with someone, you know, that me being in the room with the engineers, I probably annoyed the absolute crap out of them in the early days of me like learning web development, because they'll be working away and I'll sort of pop up and like, hey, so tell me about PHP. Like, you know, I'm trying to do this. What would you do in this case? But, you know, I just follow, you know, the UX and UI. I follow a lot of Instagram pages and I know it's a weird source for like learning, but there's actually some really good Instagram sort of pages and channels and people to follow on that where they'll just share you like all these quick little tutorials and, you know, UX, UI design, just looking at some really good examples of good websites, you know, Behance and that sort of thing from that design inspiration side. Like, I'm definitely not a designer. I'd like to think I am, but I've also seen my designs when no other designer has been over them and they're not great. Yeah, the design learning piece, I can't see a huge benefit in like either option really, in terms of like, if you're self-taught, you are probably going to do things a little bit differently, but the end result will probably be the same as if you went and paid a lot of money for a course. You might get a nice piece of paper with that side, but yeah, you know, the really good designers I've worked with, none of them have done any kind of degree that is relevant to their design. They're generally very artsy sort of people, and they might have gone and done a BA in literature or something, you know, something quite random. Like they may have a degree, but it's generally not been around anything to do with their actual design work. They've generally been just talented designers.
Yeah, I think there's some things that can't necessarily be formally taught, and that get up and go and that initiative to learn things on the fly, I think, is such an important skill, especially now when a lot of formal like tertiary education is not keeping up with how quickly the industry is evolving. So I know, speaking from experience for me, I felt like when I graduated, a lot of the things that I learned in first year were already not obsolete, but had changed quite a bit for when I was starting to get into the design industry. So it's a really interesting topic, I think, and you're right, and with a lot of tech jobs that, like, for example, software engineering, anything to do with data analytics, I think is really important to have that like tertiary education. But you're right, anything like creative, that stuff, you can learn on the fly not quite easily, but it can be done. And that ability to jump in is super important that I think a lot of designers need to have. So, yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Like in the software engineering space, they have this idea of co-working or co-coding. So you'll basically, you'll work together on a piece of code and you'll have those discussions and things. And I think that's really, at least from the UI UX design space for me, that's actually how I learned a lot as well, was just basically attaching myself to someone in the company I was at who was doing that and just picking their brain and seeing what they were doing and asking questions. And, you know, then it's kind of like that mentorship concept, right? Like without being the I guess everyone's, at least for, in my head, I always see the mentor as this, like, you know, gray-haired old man that's, yeah, like most of the people that I've learned the most from are the same age as me. We've worked together. They're just in a different area that I've been interested in.
And it shows the importance of just asking questions. Like you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be like, oh, that's not my area. I don't want to get involved. Hell no. Get in there, get curious, ask a bunch of questions. You never know what's going to come out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the, like, especially from the product role, you've got to, like, there's this idea that you've got to be the domain expert, but there's definitely a huge piece of that that's true. But I've also found that one of my strengths is that broader knowledge, particularly because, like, projects that you work on or product that you're working on quite often doesn't just sit in a single lane of, or single area. It touches a lot of different things. So yeah, going and asking questions, spending that time with the people that you work with and learning what they do, how they do it, what their pain points are as well, it all really helps, I guess, building that skill set around product in general.
And do you think that it's kind of like helped out with your current role of doing like the product ownership? You've got that really good broad general knowledge about all of the facets of a product.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, at Coda, we've got a really good UI UX designer, Sash, and she's just an absolute beast in terms of, like, I give her something expecting it to take a few weeks. Yeah, it's a big scope. You know, we need to do some prototyping, a few different tests and things. She'll turn up in, like, 2 days. I'm just like, how do you do this? Like, how is that so? How are you doing that so quick? And she's just the maestro at Figma. Like, everything's so well organized. She's not looking for stuff. She's not losing that time. Keyboard shortcuts, absolute queen. Like, here's me just looking at the UI, clicking on stuff. And she's just like, bang, 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 two key clicks, and it's all done. Yeah. And then that, I'm like, all right, show me that shortcut again. Like, how did you do that? And then, like, that's that's parked away in my little knowledge bank now. So when I have to do like a really quick wireframe to give to her as a scope, then yeah, it takes me less time to do that now, so I can give her more detailed stuff. But that's come from me asking questions to her about how she was doing that. And then like those examples, and even across engineering, is yeah, just trying to understand how they do stuff, particularly when you're writing tickets or that initial discovery phase. It just gives you really good insight from a product owner's point of view to understand, like, actually there's this whole task that might have been missed in scoping this project had I not have known about how they set up the server for a new client. You know, an example there actually on a product that we're working on recently was setting up email addresses so that when the emails go out, the email goes out from the logged in user's email address. As a product owner point of view, I would have completely missed that, or just wrote the ticket up as, you know, when I want to send an email, send an email. But then understanding the complexities in that and those subtasks, it sort of gave me a lot more information to be able to put into the ticket so that our estimates for the business were a lot more accurate. And that just came from asking questions to the DevOps engineers. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the summary of my way of learning, is just ask questions, right?
Yeah, be nosy.
Yeah, yeah, be annoying. Be that guy that just keeps sticking his nose into stuff that he's not supposed to. But it really does help. Like, the amount of stuff that I've picked up from just asking questions that I can go back to, even a project 2 years in advance, and like, oh, actually, when I was working at this place, I used to sit next to this person who did this role and they used to do it that way. And that actually becomes an entire solution for a project.
Yeah.
Because, it's just
picking up
something,
and dropping on people.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Spying. Spying. Yeah. The secret to success is just spying on other people.
So, Ben, what inspires you or like motivates you to keep working in product and tech?
Good question. I think my main inspiration actually comes from problems. I'm kind of a problem solver, which annoys my wife because sometimes she just wants to tell me a story. I'm like, well, here's a solution. I guess, yeah, I really am that problem solver where I enjoy, and it's weird, but the harder the problem or the more complex the problem, the more I kind of like digging into it. Yeah, I guess that's probably the easiest way to sum it up, to be honest. I know like everything in product is supposed to be around value, right? Adding value.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, yeah, the way I get inspired, which leads to that value add, is really around getting into the core problems as well. You know, mm-hmm. if I hear one of the engineers complaining about some, you know, the way they do something or complaining and they're like, oh, we should really fix this sort of thing. That's like, that's where the ears prick up. I'm like, oh, what's this? Like, yeah. What's going on over here?
I can get involved here.
And the same with the customers, you know, they come to us and it's something that a lot of people who work in that, I guess, customer project based area, you know, you get this whole big list of like, here's the features we want or that sort of thing. And straight away, I'm flipping it into like, all right, well, what problem do you think this is going to solve? And, you know, there's an exercise called 5 Whys, which, you know, you sort of deep dive further into trying to establish what the core problem is. And then you work your way back up. And it might be that the feature they requested is actually the best solution. Yeah, that's really what inspires me. And then seeing really cleanly executed product, where you completely understand the problem that they're solving. And it might be something super, super simple. What's an example? Oh, seen some bed sheets the other day on Facebook or Instagram or something. And it's a fitted sheet and everyone knows how much of a pain in the ass they are. But it had handles. And I was just like, that is awesome. Like,
genius.
You've just put these handles on it so you can just like grab the handle, stretch it around, job done.
How has no one thought of that before? Yeah, and that's when you know how like it's simple is best sometimes. Yeah, love that.
The same thing in software. Like I'm at the moment I'm in this big like time hacking, time boxing, growth hack kind of mindset. I'm trying to find like a system that works for me, and the best one I've actually found is just an old-fashioned, I've got it lying around somewhere, just an old-fashioned diary, basically. Well, there's all these fancy texts, there's these AI things now, like motion and everything. And this is just basically a book where you just write down like the most important thing you want to do today, and then the second most, and you just have this list. And then you just literally draw a box and off it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's something to be said, about just keeping it simple. Yeah. And sometimes that's just the best way to go about it. I know I can say I've got a bunch of Notion boards at the moment, things open on Trello, like my Google calendar, and I'm like, sometimes I just, this is meant to be making me feel more organized, but it's making me feel more overwhelmed. What needs to change here?
Spend half your day just organizing your calendar.
Exactly. Yeah. But I guess like going off that vein, Ben, I would love to hear, like, obviously you're a big problem solver. Has there been like any road bumps that you've had throughout your career, and like what's kind of made you put on the brakes a little bit?
Probably the biggest one for me would be, I guess, the burnout that I had with SportCore. Actually, like, I love working on products, I love being hands-on. Like, I'm the guy, you know, my wife goes and buys a new vacuum cleaner, 2 hours later I've stripped it down into parts just to go and work out how it works. And then, you know, I'm quite excited because I've created myself a new problem of like, how do I put this back together? But that, I guess, that passion that I have for being hands-on, and then, you know, the ability to go and create my own business out of that, that was awesome. But then there's that, the other side of like, right, now you've got to go out and raise capital. You've got to, you know, lead basically in terms of like the people management side of that. Coming from the product side and being customer focused, you do become quite empathetic, which then you sort of soak up all your employees' problems and everything around them. You're trying to do the best for them. So you end up taking on a huge amount. And for me, that sort of business and people management side ended up becoming my whole time on the business. And then I couldn't work on product. And then when the product started having problems, I'd try and spend some time on that. And then some other stuff would slip. And you just end up like, basically trying to do so much, not achieving anything, and just being absolutely knackered. Mm-hmm. And that was really my big problem. And that was where after, like, I'd set this goal of, you know, close out the capital raise, you know, get the venture capital funding in and launch the product. And, you know, went over to the Caribbean, launched the product. That went amazingly well, you know, considering all the limitations. Like, our product was also designed to be operated during a major tournament by 2 to 3 people. Because of the cost, we could only send one. So I just went over there by myself and the other guys were remote. So the workload through that period was just massive.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I was remote, some of the problems we were having, I couldn't help or be involved in too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really probably the hardest thing career-wise for me was hitting a weird one. I hit the goal I wanted to hit, but it absolutely cooked me. So I really mm-hmm. did need to take, and then being stuck in quarantine, you know, here's a shoebox to live in for 2 weeks. That doesn't help much either mm-hmm. on the mental health space. Yeah. But yeah, coming out of that trip, I was just burnt out, really not enjoying my own business, which is kind of sad, right? Like, because you've got the ability to create it how you want it. And because I was trying to do so much and spreading my time so thin, yeah, I just wasn't in a good place, which is where I took that time off. I don't even know what I took off. My plan was to take 3 months. I think I might have lasted a month mm-hmm. before I got super bored and then saw this EV Games job. But yeah, for me, that was really the biggest hurdle, was trying to work out what I wanted to do with like as a career.
Yeah, a lot of people hit that point where they're like, I just need to chill for a second and really focus on where I want to go from here. So sounds like that quarantine time was your refocus time.
Quarantine was terrible, actually. I definitely don't recommend it after quarantine.
I can't see that happening.
Yeah, you know, the time after, like spending the time with the family, getting that time to just work out what it is that you're not actually happy about. And for me, like, I actually originally thought I was really happy being CEO. And then I realized that was the part that was making me miserable. Like, I just wanted to, you know, put me in a room with some engineers and let us just go and solve some problems. So that was, yeah, basically where I flipped it back around. And then the EB Games job popped up and, you know, it was a big pay drop. It was quite daunting going back into just being an employee of a big company.
Mm-hmm.
But it was what I wanted to do. So I sort of, I wrote that down as being a opportunity to go and reshape myself back into products. And I was super lucky that my manager there, Michelle, was like amazing. She helped iron out my, cause, you know, when you come from your own company, you can kind of do what you want, right? You're just like, all right, we're going to go and do this. Michelle was quite patient with me, like on my little tangents there where I'm like, oh, it'd be nice to go and do this. And she's like, nope, back this way. focus on this problem, not that one. Yeah, that reset was, I guess, the solution to that. What for me has been the biggest problem in my career was, sort of accidentally taking myself off the path of what I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And yeah, basically getting to that point where you just really don't enjoy the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, taking that time out to reset and go, right, well, what do I need to do to get back onto where I want to be? And that's really how I did it.
Yeah, now you're just kicking goals. And yeah, I think it's really helpful to listen to your gut when you're going through that kind of those kinds of like, oh, I should be enjoying this, but I'm not. And what does that mean? And yeah, everyone has those times in their career where I'm like, oh, you just feel like you are torn between what you thought this would look like and then what it actually does look like in reality. So yeah, and now you're just like kicking all these goals with Coda, which is so exciting. But yeah, thanks so much for hopping on an episode with us, Ben. Really, really enjoyed having a chat with you and learnt a lot. So yes, thank you so much.
No worries.